Morning from 10 until 2.
Support for WGTD comes from Classic Violins, quality and tradition since 1989. Featuring award-winning handcrafted violins, violas, and cellos, private and small group lessons for all ages and experience levels, woodwind and brass instrument rentals. Visit classicviolins.com, 577-5488.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our guest today is Senator Bob Wirch, state senator from the district in Madison. Good morning, Senator Wirch.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about, well, there was an election recently, if you remember, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, but some of our listeners probably don't know exactly what district you represent here in southeastern Wisconsin, what geographically area it is you represent in Madison, and it's changed, so we forgive them for that. Why don't you remind us?
Well, I represent the 22nd Senate District. That consists of basically the city of Kenosha and the city of Racine. So I have an urban district.
Senator, we have some mixed government here in Wisconsin again. We had something of a blue wave. Talking about Wisconsin first on the state level, was this a blue wave in your opinion?
It was a blue wave on the big positions and not necessarily so on the legislative races. Why? Because the Republicans couldn't gerrymander the whole state. And when it came up to the whole state, we got a new governor. Of course, we got a new lieutenant governor in with that mix. We got a new attorney general. And we got Tammy Baldwin reelected. So we did well on the state level in the big races and not so hot on the assembly and Senate races because of the gerrymandered maps out
there. Did you see a Democratic shift in the legislative races in the state, in the senatorial and assembly districts, as we saw demonstrated by the New York Times on that interactive map so well at the beginning of the week? Did you see it? Would you say there was a shift at least toward the Democratic side or not?
No. Actually, we lost one seat in the state Senate, and they're about the same in the state assembly. So there was, you know, our base was ginned up to go out and vote, but so was the Republican base. And of course, even the big win in numbers was Tammy Baldwin. She won by a comfortable margin, but the attorney general and governor's races were close. And historically, that's usually the way it is in Wisconsin. Even when Scott Walker won gubernatorial elections, it was always pretty close, 52-48, stuff like that. So we have a history of close races, and the Democrats just happen to prevail this time on the big races.
What about the margin of victory for Republicans in the Assembly and Senate races in the state? We might start with the 1st Congressional District.
Yes, that was a big, substantial win for Byron Stile. And Randy Bryce lost that race. It was a very negative campaign with a lot of commercials in there attacking Bryce's character and past brushes with the law. And guess what? We elected another corporate lawyer from the 1st District. So I shouldn't say another one. When I ran 14 years ago, I ran against Reince Priebus, who was a corporate lawyer. He didn't make it, but this corporate lawyer prevailed in the election.
What do you think about the margin of his victory over Bryce?
Well, it was a good victory for the Republicans, but it also reflected the district. You know, that district used to be a 50-50 district back when Les Aspin was in, and during the 20 years that Paul Ryan was the representative, he made the district much more Republican by swapping different areas. I think he swapped Beloit, I believe, to the Madison rep at the time, And he picked up Muskego, a much more Republican area. So what used to be a 50-50 district, I would guess, is probably about 55-56% Republican. So it would be an uphill battle for any Democrat in that area.
Well, you harked back to Les Aspin. For some of our younger listeners, maybe you could tell us who Les Aspin is and why he's an important figure.
Well, Les Aspin was a great congressional representative from the 1st District. My goodness, many years ago in the 1960s and the 70s. And a terribly bright guy. I heard him talk a few times. He sounded like a college professor talking about foreign policy. And he went on to be Secretary of Defense. I think it was that in the Clinton administration. But while he was in Congress, he was chair of the Armed Services Committee and just a very bright fellow and a good public representative for our area.
Very distinguished representative,
yes,
from our area. We have a history of them who rose to national stature. And, of course, Paul Ryan, who has had tremendous
House.
National stature. Yes. You can't go higher than that. Since we were talking about the 1st Congressional District, this is sort of my hobby horse, Bob. You know, there were 7 candidates for that seat. There were 5 Republicans and 2 Democrats. And this observer noticed that not one of them had ever written a single law or voted on a single law in their lives. There had been union president, school board president, board of regents, the University of Wisconsin system, all nice positions of authority and responsibility. But truthfully, they never ever had a vote on a law that governed people in the sense that of the thing they were running for. Whatever happened to the idea that, you know, you went to the assembly, then you went to the state senate, and then maybe you had the guts to run for Washington, and maybe you'd start out running for an alderman or a village commissioner or something. I guess people don't want people with any experience or knowledge of the legislative process representing them now. What's going on?
Well, this is the age of the 30-second attack commercials, and whoever can get the better attack commercials usually wins, and unfortunately, they don't look at background and that. I'm old-fashioned and old.
Join the club.
I started out in the county board, and then when John Antaramian moved on to be mayor, opened a seat in a state representative, and now I'm state senator. So I moved up, but that's very old-fashioned now. They pick somebody who photographs well, Byron Style photographs well, and then they put a lot of money behind them and throw a lot of negative ads out there, and that's been a winning combination in the past and in the present, too.
Well, you didn't have to run in this cycle. You'll be up for election in a little later.
Yes, 2020.
Now, there's been a lot of talk about divided government at the state level. Is anything going to get done? Just between us, there's probably only about 4,000 or 5,000 people listening right now, and I know things could change. For our listeners, we're going to be broadcasting this on the 17th, but we're recording it 2 days early. So if all hell breaks loose in Madison and we don't mention it, that's why. Senator Wirch, is there going to be total gridlock in Madison?
No, I don't think so. I think, but it's going to be a big, big change for the Republicans because for 8 years they've had one party government, meaning they control the assembly, the Senate, the governor's chair, the attorney general, some people would say the Supreme Court. So now they're going to have to compromise. That wonderful word that we haven't used in years, compromise. And that will have to be done because we are a strong governor, weak legislature form of government. Why? Because the governor has a very powerful veto pen in this state. And so I think it's a refreshing change that to go back to compromise and talking to each other. And that's what's going to happen. And they will be feeling each other out and seeing what they can do. And actually, the first test of that will be the budget, because the new governor will be addressing both houses of the legislature probably end of January, early February with his budget. He'll talk about the highlights. Then it goes to the Joint Finance Committee. I served on that committee 2 different times. and then they will go through the budget line by line. And usually the majority party goes through the budget, and they have a representative from the governor's office. And so they're operating off the governor's budget. That's the one that comes over to the legislature. And they kind of get an idea as they go through things, what's going to happen. And I know in the past, the legislature wanted a veto-proof promise on certain items because they know the governor's power. And if they got that, they were okay. If they didn't, then they'd always worry about whether that was in fact going to be happen in the budget. See, the governor has the tremendous advantage. He presents the first copy of the budget to the legislature. When they get done with it, he then gets it to veto what he doesn't like and okay what he does like. So he's first with the budget, and then he gets the last shot at the budget. So that's a lot of power. And once the rhetoric settles down, they will deal with each other and work out, hopefully, compromises.
Nonetheless, he has no control over the legislative bodies whatsoever. They're solidly Republican, uh-huh. Aren't they? So is it true that this expansive veto power and ability to really change legislation with that expansive veto power that the governor has here, is it possible that could be changed and pulled away by the Republicans before Evers takes office next year?
Well, I know the Republicans are looking at what they can do to change the governor's powers, and I don't think they can mess with the veto power. They may be able to take away some other appointment powers or things like that, and they're researching it. And we're asking our legislative reference bureau to let the Democrats know what can be done and what can't be done. But I don't think anything's certainly going to happen this month, but I think there's talk of perhaps a special session sometime in December. We'll see what happens. But right now, they're exploring every possibility.
What's the best that could come of this potential for gridlock, at least with the totally Republican Assembly and Senate and the Democratic top leadership of the state? What's the best and maybe what's the worst that could come? What should we be watching for on either end of the spectrum, if you don't mind?
Well, the tip-off will be, of course, the budget. And the budget is supposed to be done by July 1st. And we will see if we're done by July 1st, everything's okay. There have been stubborn periods in the past, periods of stubbornness that have brought the budget into October when they couldn't agree on that. So that'll be the tip off if they can get a budget done on time. And we have major problems that have to be dealt with in the budget, too.
Do you believe that there will be any substance to any of these threats about limiting the governor's power? In your heart of hearts, do you believe that this is actually possible, or is it just rhetoric? Probability and possibility.
Rhetoric is a big part of it, because don't forget, a lot of these statements came from Robin Voss, and Robin Voss was running for re-election as speaker in front of his caucus. And so, of course, he wasn't going to sound like he was going to give up anything when he needed to win a vote in the Republican caucus. So I'm hoping that was just overheated Republican rhetoric out there. But I really don't know. We will know if we get called into a session and they try and make some changes.
So you're hoping it was more posturing and less...
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
Less prediction of actual practice. What about the legislative picture now? Some people are calling it rather stagnant. What do you see coming out of the new legislature in the next session? What positive pieces of legislation do you believe that the parties can work towards together?
Well, we have major problems out there that must be addressed in the budget. I've talked before about our economy is really not as good as what people think it is in a... In a good booming economy, we're not doing as good as people think in Wisconsin, meaning we have last time I checked, an $800 million structural deficit, meaning that we use creative accounting in the state of Wisconsin. We don't pay bills on time. We carry them over in that. And that can be a real problem if we go into a recession. Michigan and Minnesota use conservative, proper accounting, and they have a big surplus. So we have a deficit. That's a problem we have to deal with. Number two, we have crumbling roads and infrastructure. Governor Walker wanted to get reelected at the expense of keeping up our roads and infrastructure. Besides that, we have a problem with our prisons. We're at about 130-140% of capacity. I think we have about 23,500 people in our prisons. And so we got to figure out what we're going to do about that. Interesting perspective on that is former Governor Tommy Thompson just came out with a new book. And in that, lead up to the book and the PR out there, he said the biggest regret was building so many prisons out there. So he said that he would be looking at criminal justice reform or prison reform, and we'll see how that develops and if anything is done on that issue in the budget. So roads, prisons, our structural deficit, hopefully they will all be dealt with in the budget this spring.
My guest on Community Matters this morning is State Senator Robert Wirch. Bob represents much of the listening area of this station in the Tri-County area. Senator, we just talked about former Governor Tommy Thompson, and he's been all over the news Wednesday and Thursday of this week. Suddenly he's popped up out of nowhere. What's going on? Why is he suddenly playing such a role? Is it just because he's in town promoting his book, or is something going on with his influence with the Republican Party in the state? What's your sense of that?
Well, I think he's pushing his book, and since the election, he doesn't have to worry about offending Governor Walker, because Governor Walker is going out the exit door. So all of a sudden, Tommy feels probably emboldened to be a little bit more of a voice of the Republican Party.
So he's sort of seized the mantle, right, in a sense.
Yeah, and I think that has a good part of it. Before, he was always worried about offending the governor, and now there's a different situation.
Now, Governor-elect Tony Evers has made some promises in terms of doing things, and most of them cost real money. You just alluded to the state's structural budget deficit. Noodle for us a little bit on how he's going to fulfill any promises with a tight budget situation?
Well, and I think, and once again, I've been rapping Republicans, and I'll rap Evers now across the knuckles. Some of his rhetoric during the campaign didn't add up, meaning he wants to more money for the schools, more money for infrastructure, and, oh, by the way, I'm not going to raise taxes. Well, I want to see how that's done. I scratched my head when I heard that latest promise about not raising taxes. I mean, even the Conservative Manufacturers Association in the last budget said, just raise the gas tax a nickel so we can fix the roads. You know, business has to get their commerce from point A to point B, so they have a stake in a good road system in the state. So I don't know how you do it without raising taxes. Governor-elect Evers talked about cutting the manufacturing and ag huge tax break out there. But how's he going to do that without getting past Robin Voss and the Senate Republicans? So the answers are not apparent because it's going to be compromised coming in. Now, I think there's a possibility of agreement because Robin Voss, as Speaker of the Assembly, stood up to Governor Walker in the last budget. That's one of the reasons the budget was late, because Voss understood the need to fix the roads in the state. But eventually he lost to the power of the governor. Well, governor's gone. We've got a new governor. So hopefully Voss and Evers can work something out to fix our roads. that's something that just has to be done. I mean, it's good for tourism, it's good for business, and quite frankly, Governor Walker left us a mess, and it's going to cost money to fix those roads.
With respect to the election, Bob, what do you think the impact of the gerrymandering is, and what's the status from your vantage point of the gerrymandering court challenges? Where do you think this is going to go? There have been some interesting statistical things done with Wisconsin. Wisconsin's been kind of a poster child for some in the academic community and, of course, the political community. We have some very weird-looking districts, and some of the districts almost seem to me to be drawn so that it's too expensive for a challenger to run because there are multiple media markets in the district. And for the listener, just to be clear, if you have a district that encompasses multiple media markets that don't share the same broadcast signals or cable signals, it means you have to buy a lot of extra coverage that you might not otherwise need. So you have to spend maybe twice as much on your media in your campaign.
Now, before I comment on this, I'll do a disclaimer that I am one of the winners in this gerrymandering battle. I always tell people I got the people that Robin Voss didn't want, meaning that he took all of the rural areas in western Kenosha County and Pleasant Prairie and western Racine County and made a very solid, strong Republican Senate district. And I got the people that he didn't want, the urban people who vote Democratic. So I was a winner in gerrymandering. There are very few winners out there. And
few winners of the Democratic persuasion.
Yes, but I mean, it's not good for democracy because what you have there is two not very competitive seats. And it's extremely difficult to challenge the incumbent when you have such overwhelmingly partisan seats. So we have a classic example in Kenosha and Racine County of what's been going on all around the state with gerrymandering. And by the way, it costs the taxpayers, and the Republicans are always talking about being champions of the taxpayers. It costs the taxpayers millions and millions of dollars to draw up these crooked maps, number one. Number two, to defend these crooked maps with high-priced lawyers in the courts. So they wasted a lot of money. But having said that, gerrymandering, I believe, will now change. Why do I say that? Because the next map has to be ready for 2022. And you can't – we have arguably the most gerrymandered map in the country right now. And the new map, Tony Evers will not agree to a partisan map. So you need three branches to agree, the Assembly, the Senate, the governor. Well, they only have two branches. So if they don't have an agreement, it'll be turned over to a federal judge, and a federal judge will draw a new map. And the new map has to be better than the one we have right now. So I see the election as a way of bringing in a new map 2022.
What about the court challenges? What are you hoping for or not hoping for?
It's hard to guess with this Supreme Court because many people thought we had a winning case in front of the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court punted. They didn't say yes on the map. They didn't say no. They kicked it out on a technicality. So we have to start all over again. And plus the composition of the Supreme Court has changed. So our best bet is having Tony Evers as governor and letting a federal judge change the map.
That sounds like a very depressing scenario to me, Senator Wirch. I mean, kicking it to the courts is not really a solution. That's not a permanent solution. That's not the ideal solution, is it? A lot of states have an independent commission. Why aren't we – is there any chance we would talk about that? Because, you know – going through this periodically is not a solution.
Right,
you
and
have
that's
to
what
agree.
Iowa does. Yeah. They have a – and we could have saved the taxpayers millions of dollars by having some nonpartisan commission draw up fair maps. That's what they do in Iowa. I have been a co-sponsor of legislation to have us adopt that. But guess what? Republicans never gave it a hearing. That's one of the best ways of killing a bill is you just let it hang out there and never give it a hearing. And that's what happened – with our redistricting bill.
Well, what next then? let's suppose that there's another election in a couple of years, and the population of Democrats and Republicans in the Senate and the Assembly changes. Is that going to have to be the precursor to any meaningful change in our system?
No, it'll change now because Tony Evers is embarking on a 4-year term, and obviously it's got to be done within that time frame, and he's not going to go along with a partisan bill. So there will be change.
So either a federal judge or maybe even the Republicans that have opposed you in the past might sign on to something that would be a more permanent solution?
Or maybe there, maybe there might be a shocking occurrence that they might actually agree on a map. I find that hard to envision at this time, but stranger things have happened. We'll see. It's very, they haven't even been sworn in yet, so it's hard to speculate on what compromises they could make in the future.
You're very brave to bring your crystal ball here this early. We appreciate that. While your crystal ball is out on the table, Governor Evers-elect and Foxconn has been on people's lips a lot. What doesn't it mean? What's your opinion of the status of that project with respect to the changing of the governorship at the turn of the year?
Well, it's hard to tell. I think certainly the governor-elect blasted Walker on some elements of Foxconn, but I don't think he's going to do anything to derail Foxconn. What he will do, and what I'm very excited about, is he will reinvigorate the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, and bring them back to a basic mission of protecting our environment. And they, of course, have oversight of Foxconn, and so they will hopefully do a better job doing that. Because, I remember a Republican senator saying to me in the washroom, he said, look, most of the major decisions in the DNR were made in the governor's office anyway. So I'm excited that we can go back to having the DNR protect our resources instead of political decisions. Along with that, hopefully put scientists back on the payroll to make decisions in the DNR. You know, they were kicked out by Walker and the Republicans because they didn't follow the party line all the time.
Well, I hear you saying that the agreements with Foxconn will probably be policed more heavily, and the agreements in terms of results and mitigation of any negative effects with respect to water and other environmental concerns and the air will be enforced in a way that you might not have expected otherwise. I'm putting words in your mouth here.
That's what I meant. And there are questions out there on, of course, water quality and how they will be dealing with heavy metals and how they deal with that and protect the environment and the groundwater and things like that.
Since we're on the topic of Foxconn has been in the news lately. They've changed the emphasis of what kind of a product they're going to make in the plant. That keeps evolving. They presented new numbers on the types of employees they're going to need. Allegedly, they're looking for engineers in Taiwan. We don't know if there's any real proof about that, but there's been rumors reported. Are you nervous about this? What about the idea that has been circulated about tax credits for hiring foreign workers in addition to American workers? All these things are being rumored and speculated about. What's your take on this, Senator?
Well, certainly Foxconn has gotten, in my opinion, and I was for the proposal. I'm a third-generation factory worker, and I saw my factory, American Brass, and many other ones shut down, and jobs and money go off to China. So I'm in favor of jobs and money coming back from China into the Middle West. I think that's a good thing. But we have to hold them accountable, clearly. Let's remember, the deal was set up. There's no upfront money. And let me repeat that. No upfront money for Foxconn. They have to perform. I think half the money will compensate them for construction, meaning they got to spend a dollar before they get 15 cents from the state. And the second half of the $3.5 billion will be after they provide the jobs in the area. So they have to come through with the jobs before they get the taxpayers' money. So I think those things we have to be careful about. I would like perhaps stronger guarantees of how long the jobs will last before they get paid. I would like to see that. But I think it's going to be good for our area, not just the jobs that Foxconn provides, but the feeder companies that will develop to supply Foxconn, I think will bring in additional jobs. We paid a hefty price for it. I think we paid too much. But I think it's going to be an overall plus for our area.
Now, some critics are complaining about the cost of new power lines being borne by electric ratepayers, extending water utilities out, widening and building the roads. I can understand a certain validity to that. I can also, if I wanted to argue the other side of the coin, I could say, well, these are all things that are going to be needed sooner or later, so it's a question of when you put them in if you expect the region to continue to grow. What's your take on that piece of it, Senator Birch?
Well, change is painful, and clearly some changes have to be made with roads and infrastructure. And let me get into one thing that you didn't mention in your question, and that is eminent domain. Some people made off like a bandit. They got 140% of assessed valuation, and they left all the way to the bank for their property. And then, of course, there were other people that didn't want to sell. Maybe the land had been owned by the family for 100 years and stuff like that. But I don't think you can blame the legislature for that. And I was around maybe about 14 years ago. There was a Supreme Court decision that said that eminent domain could be used for economic development. There was a big backlash from the states, and we were one of the states that passed legislation. At the time, we thought it dealt with it, saying that it had to be blighted property before they could take it for eminent domain.
So I recall that. That was a very big issue at that time.
We thought we had dealt with it, and everybody voted for it. And then all of a sudden, you know, I talk about creative accounting. There was some creative lawyering out there and how they define blighted areas out there. I didn't go to law school, but I'm still scratching my head over that one. And they're using that to take away some property. So the legislature thought they had dealt with eminent domain 14 years ago, and all of a sudden hasn't turned out the way we thought it would be.
Would you be in favor of taking that up again? Is there such a thing as
sure,
a piece of corrective legislation that might work in your mind?
Sure, I would be willing to revisit that, but unfortunately I'm in a minority. And I'm not sure if the Republicans would want to take that up again.
Well, since we're talking about helping companies locate or maybe expand here in the borders of the state of Wisconsin, what's going on with Kimberly-Clark? You might want to explain what that's about to our listeners and comment on where that's going to head and what the legislature can and can't do about it.
Well, I think it's kind of sad and hilarious at the same time, because it's sad because they're threatening to shut down plant and put some people out of work. And I think the Republicans are kind of dancing on this issue. First of all, they were supposed to address the issue. There was a deadline by November 1st. They didn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole because there was an election coming up. And so they put it off until after the election. And now we're trying to find out what joint finance is going to do. And the hilarious part about it is they're saying that, well, we can't do anything because they can't get enough Democratic votes. They never worried about Democratic votes before. They have a sizable majority in the Assembly. They have a sizable majority in the Senate. And it kind of defies reality to say you need Democratic votes. I mean, they passed a lot of things on party line votes in the past, but the real problem is they have up to 8 Republican senators who said no way will they do this, so they don't want to bear the burden of you know, being responsible for lost jobs, so they blame the Democrats. So their problem is they can't get their own Republican senators in line to rescue this company. And I have real concerns about it, too, because, look, when we talk about Foxconn, we're bringing in arguably 13,000 new jobs. Yet Kimberly-Clark is asking for big tax breaks to simply keep existing jobs there. And that sets a terrible precedent for the future, because almost every company in there that has a economic problem could then start threatening the state. Hey, if you don't give us what you gave Kimberly-Clark, we're going to move out of the state. And
Me-tooism would rise its head.
Yes, economic me-tooism could be very difficult on that. And so at this time, I don't see how the legislature rides to the rescue on Kimberly-Clark.
There's going to be a lot of interesting times in the session ahead, Senator Wirch. What are you interested in promoting? What's your wish for Bob Wirch's involvement in this next session? What bandwagon are you going to be on?
Two bills I'm working with. Number one, when I'm out there knocking on doors, walking in neighborhoods, the biggest complaint I get is the fastest growing crime, and that is ripping off seniors. Meaning seniors tell me all the time, my phone is ringing all day long. People are trying to make believe they're the IRS. There's the grandparent scheme out there, and these people are very good at it. Or you just won a lottery if you just send a few bucks in here. So my bill, and I stole it right out of Consumer Reports, and they suggested to up the penalties so that lawyers would become involved to hopefully get back some of this money from the crooks. We brought that up. Unfortunately, the Republicans would not give it a hearing in the last session, but I'm hopeful that they will in this session, or at least, like they do in the past, they'll steal my bill and it'll go through in a different form, because that is the fastest growing crime out there. You know, if you're a crook, it's dangerous to hold up a filling station. Somebody might have a gun. It's dangerous to hold up a bank. So you just keep calling until you find a vulnerable senior citizen. And so I want to address that problem with my legislation. The second piece would be, of course, what I talked about before. Take the politics out of the DNR. My bill would go back to the way it was for 60 years, that the DNR board that's made up of hunters, trappers, fishermen, kayakers, campers, would pick the secretary of the DNR to get the politics out of it. And that system worked for 60 years in the state of Wisconsin. It was only changed by Tommy Thompson. And unfortunately, we had a bill through to fix it, and Jim Doyle vetoed the bill. So governors like power, but this power has been at the expense of our natural resources. And I want to go back to the old system.
I wonder if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about the ranked voting system that's the top of the news suddenly with this past election. Do you want to talk a little bit about what ranked voting is and whether you think it's something that's good or bad and whether you'd like to bring it to Wisconsin?
I like the system the way we have right now in Wisconsin. And we held a relatively error-free election, and so I'm not open to changes at this time. I would be a hard sell on that issue.
This is what we have in Maine now, where they cascade down the ballot in a sense, and it's under big challenge.
Yeah, I would. I'd listen to it, but I think we ran a pretty good election in the state.
So you don't think there's any truth to charges in this state of election fraud?
No, I think that there's always. I think that, quite frankly, I'll say this, the Republicans use the issue of election fraud to push through voter suppression legislation in the past. And there have been investigations by U.S. attorneys and the attorney general. And when they come by, when they get past the rhetoric, they may find one or two cases out of all the millions of people that vote. So I'm skeptical of that.
Are there any pieces of legislation that you're aware of in the Assembly or the Senate that would be, or would you support them or sponsor some to change the voting, the registration process and the opening of the polls, maybe even the day of voting to maybe increase turnout even further?
I'm in favor of making it easier for people to vote, whether it's Saturday or Sunday voting. Give local government more flexibility in doing that and making it easier to vote. I think it's so very important to get people involved in our democracy. When people don't vote, mischief happens. And so the more people we can get to vote, the better.
Senator Wirch, I know it's a little early, but do you have any feelings about what's going on behind the scenes in Madison? There's going to be a lot of political appointments made in the weeks ahead. Do you have any idea of who's first and who's second and who's coming and going that you could share with us at this time?
It should be fascinating. Two of my...
What should we watch for?
Hopefully somebody with great environmental credentials to head up the DNR. I'll be watching for that. There's always prominent Democrats that may end up in cabinet positions or in agencies. I kind of feel sorry for two Republican senators who last year gave up their seats to take positions in the Walker administration, and now I think their jobs are in question after barely a few months on the job with a new governor out there. So there's always change, and it's going to be fascinating to see how they do it. In fact, I was just wondering the other day, you know, I wonder if a lot of this news will come out in December, because you want to hit the ground running in January. You're sworn in January 3rd, and hopefully December is a big news month with new people coming in and helping the new governor.
We've talked a lot about turnout to vote by young people, first-time voters and people in their 20s, maybe even early 30s. What's your sense? I know you weren't knocking on doors for yourself this fall, but you were knocking on a lot of doors for the party and talking to people. What's your sense of the participation by young people this year in our area, and what do you see happening in the future in the presidential?
It's very important to get the younger generation involved to vote. And, I mean, just look at the last election. I mean, we had a new governor by 31,000 votes out of 5.5 million people in the state. And there's recounts going on as we speak in Florida and around the country, Georgia. And if ever, I mean, people don't believe their vote makes a difference, well, that's just baloney, because a lot of tight races around, and you can your vote makes a big difference out there. And that's what I tell people. And I'm helping out, because I think one of the problems in our country is we don't have an informed citizenry. You know, our newspaper is shrinking before our eyes. And number one. Number two, people aren't as interested. And so I'm having more listening sessions out there to talk over issues. I will be doing that. I'm doing it like twice a month. Plus, I'm going into the schools to talk to kids about what my job is, and I try and stay as neutral as Switzerland when I'm in there. I don't sound like a Democrat or Republican, but I want to let people know how government affects their lives and make them better citizens.
Well, we'll conclude on that note. Thank you to my guest, State Senator Bob Wirch, representing this area of the state of Wisconsin in the State Assembly, in the State Senate, excuse me. And for Community Matters, I'm Len Iaquinta, urging you to stay informed and get involved. For Community Matters, good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more is available 24 hours a day on your desktop, laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org. where you can listen live, online, 24 hours a day. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app in the Kenosha.